Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And today we're going to talk about a fan favorite, I would say pretty much universally liked episode, I think. You don't know? Okay, well,
I don't know. I'm not sure I'd ever be confident saying that about any episode.
Really?
So.
Okay.
Well,
all right.
I mean, people might say that about Bad Blood, and then Jen comes along and ruins the party.
Yeah, yeah,
so
but you're,
anything's possible.
But Jen, that is a universally liked, and you're just an aberration. I mean, come on, we have to be real about that. So
yeah, I guess we do.
But the episode is Field Trip, season
yes.
six, and we are going to be discussing that. But first, let's get to some tweets of the week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay. Tweets of the week. These were responses to our top 10 Scully moments. And we got a lot of great responses to that podcast episode. And thank you, everyone, for sharing your favorite Scully moments. Scully is, of course, beloved by all of us. Mm-hmm. So let's start with Jesse. Hi, Jesse. She says, love this episode. One of my favorite Scully moments is in the opening scene of Dreamland, where she calls Mulder on his knee to keep searching for the truth. I like that moment too, Annie. It's not, I don't think of it often as like a top Scully moment, but that whole sort of conversation about, you know, driving and don't you ever want to pull over kind of thing. It is a cool moment.
Yeah, it's actually, that is a really good moment because Scully doesn't say that sort of stuff like openly, outwardly to Mulder,
yeah.
like ever. Like, I'm trying
That's
to,
right.
I mean, I feel like the only other time we get that from her is, and I want to believe when they're actually already a couple.
Yeah.
And I know she thinks about that. We get, periodically, we get glimpses into Scully's sort of desire for sort of that normal, quote unquote, life.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is the only time she actually says that to Mulder. And so props to Scully for, you know.
That's right.
For getting the gumption and the courage to actually yeah. say that to him. So yeah, really good one. I like that.
To have that conversation. So yeah, that's not one that you hear mentioned a lot as a Scully moment. So I'm really glad to hear Jesse bring it up. So thanks, Jesse. From Monica. Hi, Monica. I love all these moments and my love for Scully is endless. Just a couple off the top of my head. In all things, when Scully just casually explains why they haven't fully crossed that semi-platonic line, maybe sometimes nothing happens for a reason, Mulder. That's a great line, isn't it, Annie? I love that. And of course, written by Gillian as well.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And it's totally true. Sometimes nothing does happen for a reason. And then something finally happens in that episode.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, there was a reason why it took till season seven. We can all, you know, believe that. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. And Monica also throws in another classic Scully quote. I will go on record to say this. That I have seen things that I cannot explain. I have observed phenomena that I cannot deny. And that as a scientist and a serious person, it is a badge of honor not to dismiss these things because someone thinks they're BS. So much passion, says Monica. So much passion.
Oh, my God. And think of how far that Scully has come in 8 years. She's saying that to Doggett, right? I'm pretty sure that's a Doggett conversation. And it's...
I feel like I'm trying to remember exactly who's present when she's says that. I feel like she's
I'm thinking, someone else as well,
but I can't remember now.
I'm thinking that's the scene where Doggett finds her sleeping with Mulder with his shirt in his apartment and she's just there to feed the fish. I think that's
yeah,
that scene.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That could well be it.
Yeah, and I mean, again, one of those things about season eight that I have come to appreciate over the years is just Scully's just complete 180 when Mulder's not around. And then
and then
her ability to sort of flip it back, you know?
Like, yeah.
It's great, though. I mean, I love it. And I mean... she was one of those people who dismissed it as BS 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And so it's such growth. I mean, it's amazing. That's a great moment.
That's an amazing quote from her because it is like so emblematic of her sort of character development and how, you know, Scully is always a woman of principles and a woman of her beliefs. And whether that belief was skepticism 100% at the beginning or to be more open as she was towards the end, she owns it 100%. And I love that about her.
Yeah.
From Kathy G. I love it when you do countdowns. We love it too, Kathy G. Always so much fun. Great Scully moments on your list. One of my favorites is in Paper Hearts. When Roche is taunting Mulder, Scully puts a stop to it, telling Roche he'll rot in his cell. She's quiet but powerful and so protective. Yeah, great moment, Kathy. That kind of reminds me a bit of the moment on my list from Beyond the Sea, except it's a little less sort of like out there and a bit more contained, but equally powerful. So I love that moment.
Yeah. Oh, Beyond the Sea was on both of our lists. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It is a very, I love when Scully gets protective of Mulder because I don't want to say it's usually the other way around. I feel like we see it a lot with Scully, especially when like Samantha type cases are involved. Like I feel like every time it's like you're getting too close to this case. Like we have this moment with Scully where she's just very protective of Mulder. And I love those. I mean, Paper Hearts is one of my top five. It's in my top five. It's such a good episode. No arguments here, Kathy. Yeah. I think that's a fabulous episode and a great moment. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love sort of like kick-ass protective Scully, and she's doing it without having to sort of like overplay it. So that is a really great moment, actually.
Yeah.
So thanks for that. From Call Me Scully, forgive me if I've forgotten because I listened over 3 days. Well, I mean, we do talk a long time, so I can imagine it takes people, you know, a couple of days maybe to get through the full episode. But, you know, kudos for sticking with it and making it through the hour and a half or however long we spent talking about Scully that night. But did anyone mention Scully, a brand new field agent holding the government operative at gunpoint to trade him for Mulder in Deep Throat? Because if that's not badass as all get out, I don't know what is. Episode 2, right? Exactly. Yeah. That whole shebang I adore and kind of came close to making my list. But I love Scully in Deep Throat.
I think that's definitely one that. That's, you know, every time we do a top 10 and then we come back and we talk about it later when people write in, there's always one or two that I'm like, ah, well, shit, that should have been on my list. That's definitely that one should have been on my list. I feel like we really could have had two separate Scully lists, like one that was just badass Scully moments.
Yeah.
And then one that was just like more sort of emotional Scully moments. And I know you and I kind of tried to combine the two.
Yeah.
But that would.
Because Scully is all those things.
Yeah. I mean, she's so many things. And that was definitely. Yeah. That would definitely be on that.
Yeah. We could have just done badass Scully moments and had at least 10 each. And then, done sort of other Scully moments. So, but thanks to our listeners, we don't have to remember and mention them all because we get to mention it during the tweets.
You know, 6 months from now, we should just keep doing this top 10 Scully, top 10 Mulder. Like every 6 months, they will change.
We'll have like another 10. And eventually it'll just be like, we'll have reached 200 and we'll have at least one from every episode. But there are some episodes I would have several from.
Yeah.
So I could probably make it to 500 without too much difficulty.
And then by the time we come back around, we will have forgotten all the first ones. So, hey,
we're set.
We're set for life.
Move on. From Rachel. Rachel says, if I could add one that you missed, it would be Scully taking charge in that Colony Endgame when she tells the doctor, you have no idea what you're dealing with, and tenderly ruffles Mulder's hair while saying he's going to make it. Badass and compassionate in one take. You are so right, Rachel. This is the one that I think of the tweets this week that I read that I was like, I completely forgot that moment and I'm kicking myself because that is awesome. It is badass and compassionate in one take.
How many times, I mean, has Scully saved Mulder's life? And not just saved his life, but like saved his life with like her badass knowledge of science. Like seriously, like come in, because I know this science thing, Mulder is going to live. Like seriously. I there are so many moments. Like I'm thinking this, the Colony, I'm thinking Dead Alive, I'm thinking Brand X. Like I'm thinking I like all these moments are coming to my mind where I'm like, she's literally just being like, well, because of my smart brain, I have figured out how to save your life once again. And I mean, how badass can that be? Yeah, she's amazing. And, you know, she will always be there to save Mulder. And that's what we love about her.
Yeah, that is. Oh, God, I love that scene. She is so like the doctors think they know what's up, but they do not. Scully tells them what's what.
Yep.
Also from Rachel, she says, when Jen got to her number one, I literally shouted, yes, pick up the phone and make it happen. Because quite obviously, that is the top Scully moment of all time. Well, I mean, obviously, I'm not going to argue with you, Rachel, because it was for me.
It really is. Honestly, it really is. And I would have put it on my list if I wasn't 100% certain it would be on yours. So
I'm glad that we could make Rachel and some of our other listeners happy with that, because I wouldn't want to break anyone's heart by not including that, because I think there might have been trouble. So
I am
glad that we had it in there.
I am still baffled that you didn't have If I Can Save You, Let Me on your list. But I can agree that you have talked about it a lot. And so maybe it was just like, maybe it doesn't have to be on this list. So
I think it was just that I've just talked about it so many times that I was like, does this even count as a Scully moment anymore? I've talked about it a lot and I have kind of a bit of a blind spot. It's like, come on, Jen, stop talking about that one scene over and over again. I was trying to spread my wings slightly. So that's why you're a good partner, because you got it in there for me. So I didn't have to.
Right. And I'm glad that you had yours. Otherwise, I really do think people would have come after us with pitchforks. So well done, Jen.
Rightly so. We nailed what we had to nail, and we had really different tops in terms of badass Scully, compassionate, emotional Scully. So yeah, the Scully vibes covered. From Sarah, MSR or Bust. Love this, literally all of your picks. And I'll add her slamming the door on the ex-cops crew. Yeah. Her simpatico line in Syzygy. Her drugged in Three of a Kind. Shooting faster. Her running to get help after finding Mulder's body. And this is not happening. Mm-hmm. All of Milagro. And the dinner scene in Arcadia, and she includes a gift for this, baby me, and you'll be peeing through a catheter.
Yeah, God, all those are great, but baby me and you'll be peeing through a catheter really should have been on one of our lists.
That came really close to mine. I think that was on and off my list at various times throughout the day. So I was kind of heartbroken that I wasn't able to include it. So I'm really glad that Sarah did that I got to say it. So made me happy.
Fantastic.
Sarah also brings the knowledge. She says, would like to share that in a Reddit AMA, Ask Me Anything, in response to a question of whether or not she ate the cricket in Humbug, Jillian said it was a magic trick called spitting when cut. So that answers that question finally. Did she really eat it? Although, even putting it in your mouth would be like way too much for me. So kudos to Jillian either way.
Well, and I do think that sadly, I'm sure that cricket did not survive. And so they probably had to make a note on the episode that one cricket died of being in Gillian Anderson's mouth. Although I'm sure many of our fans, that wouldn't be the worst way to go.
Oh, yes. Moving on from Laura. Hi, Laura. Laura remembered Sure, Fine, Whatever, right? And I bet she's not even a blonde. I love that one too. Sure, Fine, Whatever, especially though. I was like, damn, how did neither of us even think to remember Sure, Fine, Whatever? That's like classic Scully. I'm kind of kicking myself on that one a little bit.
Well, I'm not. I don't care for that episode, but that's probably another topic for another day. Look at Jen's face of horror.
I'm just a bit surprised there. Okay. All right.
Not a big fan of Syzygy. Sorry.
Focus, Jen. Have we finally found an episode that I like better than you?
Yeah.
I think we have. We should do Syzygy sometime.
No, I think you also like Hollywood AD more than me, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's not very common that this happens.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is a special moment.
I love it.
See, topsy-turvy world indeed right now.
Anytime anyone can say Annie didn't like that is a rare moment indeed.
It kind of is. Mm. So I'm just, thrown slightly. All right, focus, Jim. All right, our last tweet of the week came from Science Blue. Hi, Science Blue. Saying this sentiment was shared by a lot of our listeners on Twitter. Stay strong, friends. Big virtual hug from Portugal. Thanks, Science Blue. It was just very sort of like heartwarming and encouraging to hear a lot of our listeners saying how much they value listening to us during this sort of quarantine-y time when people are kind of stressed and have a lot of time on their hands at the same time, which is kind of a weird state to be in. And podcasts are kind of a good way to pass the time and to hopefully be a little bit of distraction. We get to sort of fill your ears with X-File stuff for a little while. So I'm really happy to do that and happy to do whatever I can to make this topsy-turvy world just a little bit easier right now.
Yeah, same. Thanks, you guys, everybody, for writing in and saying that, because it is a it is a strange time for everybody. But, you know, one thing that will hopefully not change anytime soon is X-Files Diaries. So you guys can be, we're here for you, which will be.
We're here, which is great. Well, it's just, you know, we've always done it long distance, so it's nothing new for us. Nothing has changed a bit. We can do it all from the comfort of our own home, and we always have.
Yep. If we can bring you guys a little bit of X-Files cheer into your day, we are thrilled to do so.
We're just going to keep on plowing ahead. It's just going to keep happening. I need something in my life that's like normal, and this is pretty much the only thing right now that hasn't changed in my life. Virtually every other aspect of my life is different right now, so I'm really happy to be doing X-Files Diaries and really happy that folks want to listen to us. So thanks for that encouragement, everyone. That was really appreciated. And of course, you can always tweet at us at XFD Podcast. And we would love to hear from you on anything X-Files related or anything else you want to share with us. So thanks, guys.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
Field trip. It's a field, and they be tripping.
Yes, exactly.
It's one of the
it took me a while to grasp that sort of double meaning in the title. Like, it's a trip. I don't know what I had thought. It was just a very bland title to me, I guess. Then eventually I was like, oh, like a trip. Uh-huh. Now I get it.
It's definitely one of my favorite sort of play on word titles, because it is. It took me a long time to get it too. And I was like, oh, were they going on a field trip? I wouldn't really call that a field trip, but okay. Yeah. And then I finally was like, oh, ha ha ha. I was a little slow on the uptake, but yeah.
I'm forever getting the title between Field Trip and Detour mixed up, because they're such similar sounding titles to me that I always have to think about which one is which episode. But, you know, this is the one with the trip in it, so I should be able to remember based on that.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, this is the 21st episode. Man, back when they were pumping out so many episodes per
The penultimate episode of that season.
Of season
as previously
six.
Discussed.
Yeah.
Penultimate episodes are always awesome. Well, like from like both season three on are always awesome.
Yeah. And also have a quite shippy moment at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's sort of the Chris Carter way. Let's wrap up the ship in the penultimate episode and then stomp all over everyone's soul in the next episode. That's kind of that's what we're going to do here. Because as we know, this heads into the biogenesis arc with, you know, frickin' Diana. Well, here she comes up again. Drink.
Jesus Christ.
Taking off her
chug
top.
Chug-a-lug, everybody. Yeah. It's not just a drink when Diana's name comes up. It's just chug-a-lug because you're going to need it.
Just chug. But we don't need to talk about her. We're going to be talking about Field Trip, which I love. I think it's a great episode written by Vince Gilligan and John Schibon.
That's pronounced.
Yeah. And Frank Spotnitz as well.
You know that for those three get together, great scripts result.
Yeah. Directed by Kim Manners. As always, great director, always like enjoys the ship, and we appreciate that.
Love you, Kim.
What do you think of this episode, Jen? I mean, I love it. As I recall, it was on both of our top lists, or was it not?
Yeah.
It was on mine.
I feel like it was on mine. I usually check these things, and I forgot to check today. If it wasn't, it definitely should be.
Yeah.
Let me just say for now, if I was doing one today, it definitely would be. And I think it probably was when we first did our top 25 like about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Should do another top 25, see how they differ.
We should.
I have a lot of love in my heart for this episode, just because it's so cool. I love the structure. I love the shippiness. I love the sort of, it's a very sort of character driven episode. And I like any kind of cool mind bendy kind of episodes. And it's got all of that going on. It's just really well done. There's not like a lot of things happening. There's not a lot of extraneous characters. But it's just extremely well executed. And I like that.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head for me. Whenever they do, and we talked a little bit about this in, like, you know, in Bad Blood, even in How the Ghost Stole Christmas. Whenever they do this sort of character work, which in the end, at the end of the day, that's what these really great episodes are about, right? Like, we have this X-File and we have this sort of creepy mushroom monster that's like making everybody, you know, dissolve to skeletons, which is creepy, but like, what makes this episode so good is the Mulder Scully dynamic and how this story is told and the sort of unpeeling of the layers as you watch the story. I mean, I remember when I first saw this one, I don't think I knew what to make of it. Like, I feel like I was like, whoa, that was, and then, and the way they leave it too, even though the final scene is just so great, you're always left feeling a little unsettled. Like, what did I just watch? And I know we're going to get to this at the end of this podcast when we start discussing the ending and our theories. We will get to that, Jen. But I always leave this episode feeling a little, like, slightly disturbed. Like, it's a it's a shippy episode, but I mean, I always leave it thinking, like, I'm a little bit on edge. You know?
Yeah, it's not like a heartwarming shippy episode, because this one, I think it follows The Unnatural, if I'm remembering correctly. And
yeah, closely, that's, pretty closely.
They're both, you could argue that they're both shippy episodes, but in very different ways.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, after you watch this, you kind of feel like you've been on a trip yourself, and it's not necessarily a good one.
Right.
And it is one of those episodes that definitely benefits from rewatches and multiple rewatches, because it is such a complex plot line. You know, the hallucinations within hallucinations, mind-bending stuff, figuring out what's going on, what does it mean, when does what happen. Who's hallucinating what? Whose point of view is this exactly, and what does it say about them? Because all of those things are going on. I haven't watched it for a little while probably, and I watched it a couple of times this week. And again, I was like, the first time around this week, I was like, what's happening again now? And it's just like, when you're watching it, you never really fully understand it until the end, which means you have to really immediately go back and watch it again to kind of say, the pieces fit together now. And you see it in a totally different way. I'm trying to remember how I felt when I first watched it. I think that it was just kind of this is a cool mystery. And it's only like quite well into it that it's like, the sort of the penny drops and you're like, oh shit, they're underground. And like when you realize that, it's like really mind-blowing. And well, you know, when you know that, of course, now watching it, but watching it the first time, it was kind of like, oh my god, what's happening? It was wild.
Yeah, it's also one of those that you think I think you alluded to this, like when you think you've had it figured out, they pull the rug out from under you and be like, no, you don't. And they continually do that. They do that like two or three times throughout the episode where you think you've got it figured out. Oh, Mulder's under the thing. Okay, this is all real. Oh, wait, no, this isn't real. Oh, wait, wait, are we still?
This part's real. That part's not.
It's very, very reminiscent of being almost like being buried underground and you're trying to kind of get out, and you don't know, you don't really know when you're out.
Right, the layers.
And so that's why I think that the final scene is very significant, but we will talk about the final scene later, because first of all I think we should break down this plot and figure out, I want to know like what you think is happening, and we'll talk about like what I think is happening, and then maybe together we can come up with like some cohesiveness, because
I feel like we can. I think there's cohesion to be found.
Yeah, I think I've got a handle on it, you know, after watching this episode, you know, at least 10 times. I think what we got is, okay, we're in North Carolina, Brown Mountain, and they both don't go out to the site. First, Mulder just goes out to the site, and you see him walking over the mushrooms, and you see the spores going up. You don't really notice it, but it's there. And then I assume he goes into the cave and then falls into his hallucination while in the cave.
I'm not even told. I would have agreed with you up until tonight. And then for some reason tonight, I was just rewatching a couple of scenes and I'm starting to think he was never actually in a cave at all. Because
you mean it just sucked him down through
yeah. I'm not totally sure that we know for sure he was in the cave that we saw him in.
Right.
The cave that, you know, he's running around in. You know, there's some indication that he might actually be in there. But like when Scully's looking for him, she kind of seems to think it's a tiny, tiny cave and he couldn't possibly fit in there.
Right, right, right. But obviously I can say he's obviously not seeing Wallace. He's hallucinating him. He's chasing him.
There's definitely a hallucination happening.
Yeah. And so at some point Mulder gets sucked down. We're going to go back through detail. I'm just going to run through these point by point quickly just so we can talk about the plot. He somehow gets sucked under, and then we don't realize that until we see the entire scene where Scully goes back to his apartment and Wallace and Angie are there and he's telling her all about it and he shows her the alien and all that stuff. All of that is still in his hallucination.
Yes.
And then he starts to sort of realize, oh, wait, something's wrong. And then that's the first time we cut to Mulder in the actual cave.
They are underground.
So at this point, we're like, oh, no, Mulder needs help, right? And so then now we're back out at Scully where she's learning all of this information. This is going to be important because later I'm going to ask you something plot related, like how this all occurs, because she's talking to this doctor who I think is a bit of an unsung hero in this episode, and we should talk. We'll talk about that later. But she takes the truck out, goes out, kicks the spores, and at that point, we can assume she has also then fallen victim to it and is also being sucked underneath. There's also a weird scene where the guy's out there though, and they're looking together, and then she sees the digestive stuff, and then she finds Mulder, and so that's obviously like that's the beginning of her hallucination.
Yes.
Is that this?
I agree.
This guy has joined her out. So the guy never actually went out there with her.
No, I don't think so. You're right. Because she does go out by herself. And that's, I think, reality because she doesn't get into the spores yet at that point. She's looking for Mulder with her flashlight and everything. And then it's another scene, I think.
She hits the spores right away. She hits the spores.
Did she hit the spores right away?
Yeah, when she gets out of the truck and starts walking around, that's when she kicks the mushroom.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're saying now. But you're right. I think he's referred to, at least on IMDb, the coroner, quote unquote. Yeah. Poor guy doesn't even get a name. I don't believe he was ever actually out there with Scully. That's all within her hallucination at that point.
Right. So her hallucination then is the whole, like, him telling her about the bog sludge and the ritualistic crime and then going to the wake. And that's still all of her hallucination until Mulder shows up at his apartment.
Yes.
And then at that point, I think, is when their hallucinations merge.
Yes, like, I agree.
Then they're sharing it at that point. They're trying to figure it out. And so my question to you, Jen, is this. And obviously, we have rushed through the episode quickly. I promise you we're going to go back and talk about details.
But no, we're done. Boom.
My question to you is this. They're in Skinner's office. You know, they talk themselves out of it, allegedly. They're in Skinner's office.
Yes.
Mulder is very, very certain that this is still a hallucination, and he ends up being correct.
Yes.
But then when they wake up, everyone is there. Like, Skinner's there, and all the agents are there, and they've got the masks on and everything, and they all know what's going on. We know about the mushroom, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did they find out? Because the only thing I can think of is that coroner, the unsung hero, has solved the X-File and called Skinner up and said, you need to come out here and find your agents because they're buried under here in this exact spot. Because how the hell else did they find them? Yeah. That's my question.
Really good question. I think that the theory that I took from it was just what you said, that coroner was pretty sharp and on the ball. And he was already kind of onto the bog sludge thing and understood what was happening with that. And so
he showed Scully those old cases and
he knew about the old cases. So there was something to indicate at the very least he was able to provide clues perhaps to the FBI agents who came, perhaps from the field office, and maybe they called Skinner. But I know that I'm sure that he called in someone who was able to sort of get this going. But I'm sure it all came from the coroner, and I'm sure he had all the ideas about what was happening, and they were able maybe to kind of just execute them. But I think that he's the hero.
I had to give him the shout out, and I should have looked up this actor's name because he also did a really good job. I will look it up while we're talking. But he is a bit.
I want to see Jim Beaver. Tell me if I'm right. I mean, it's not like I remember this from the 90s. I just looked it up like a week ago. But
I will check it out. But he is an unsung hero of this episode because he saved their lives.
He did.
Because they wouldn't have been able to save themselves. Like Mulder said, he's like, we can't just wake ourselves up and get out of it. Like, they had to be rescued.
Yeah, they really did. Like, within the hallucination, they're able to kind of rescue themselves. But in the reality, the most Mulder can do, he can still stick his hand up a little bit.
Yes.
But that's what he can do. There's no indication to me that they would have been able to get out without help.
Yeah. Jim Beaver is correct, by the way.
Boom.
He did a great job as coroner. Yeah. The nameless coroner.
Yeah, his name was Coroner. He's got to be like a prolific kind of character actor because he looks super familiar to me. I think I've seen him in 100 things.
Oh,
I thought maybe he had been on the X-Files before, but it turns out I don't think he is. But Yeah, I think I've seen him in lots of other things. He's very good. He's great. He's just, you know, it's one of those small roles, but there's not many people in this episode. And so each role is very important, even if your character doesn't even have a name.
Exactly. And I mean, I just wanted to give him a little shout out because it really occurred to me, like, okay, yeah, they broke free of it or whatever, but everyone's just there. They're all just kind of there. And I'm like, how'd they all get there?
Yeah, there's a lot of people there. And yeah, they probably needed that many to find them because, you know, someone's got to see Mulder's little hand sticking up there. So, yeah, it looked like a big operation. It was very different from the way that within the hallucination, Mulder and Scully come out of the earth and they're just there by themselves.
Right.
The reality has a totally different vibe to it because there's tons of people there and vehicles, and it just feels more like what it would feel like.
Absolutely. And I was thinking the same thing. Like, they have a different, it's like I said, it's like a somber vibe. It's like, oh, this is serious.
Yeah. You get the sense of like how serious this really is and how big a deal it is, because you don't really get that sense necessarily up until that moment.
Right. Well, let's travel back to the beginning, shall we? And and talk about some of the details of this. I wanted to first talk about Angela and Wallace Schiff.
Yes, let's.
Like you said, we have very few characters in this episode, yeah, but they're played by Robin Lively and David Denman, who I know from The Office, the American version.
He was in that?
He plays Roy, Pam's fiance.
Oh, that's how he looks familiar. Yeah. I was like, what have I seen him in? Yeah, that's it. Now I remember.
He's adorable and sweet in this, which is probably why you couldn't make that connection.
Yeah.
But
He was a cutie.
He was. I don't remember who told me this, but I really actually noticed it on this viewing that the two of them have lots of little intricacies about them that kind of mirror Mulder and Scully.
That's exactly what I noticed.
Okay.
I'm like, interesting.
And even down to the dumb thing, like he says, I have longer legs than you.
Yeah, exactly.
He's always saying Scully. Well, he does say Scully has little legs. And then the fact that she's like, you're leaving me behind. It's not my idea of fun. Like, just like some of you noticed that too. Okay.
Yeah. And like, he was so excited and she wasn't that into it. She's red haired. He's dark haired. There's definitely, yeah, I really started to kind of, I don't know if I noticed that before. I may have sort of semi-noticed it, but it really stood out to me on this viewing. And I was like, oh, parallels.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And we'll talk about some other parallels that I'm sure will come up later in regards to that. Ah, I see your face. I know what you're going to say, but we will have to save it. But like, I wanted to talk too about this opening. Not the cold open, because that was really well done cold open, by the way.
Isn't
I think
that
it's
a good
freaky
cold open?
It's so freaky, and it makes me so tense, and it's just really well done.
My God, but the dissolve to the skeletons is one of the best sort of pre-credit moments in the X-Files for me. It's just so like, what the fuck? Scary and horrible.
Yeah, really, really good.
So, yeah, no, I love that.
This opening scene of them in the basement, and I wanted to point out, because we're in late season 6, which is like they just have gotten the X-Files back fairly recently, you know. And he even makes a comment about like, "Oh, I don't know where they left the screen."
Which, I don't know where the screen, which was kind of funny.
It was very funny because obviously he's talking about Spender and Diana, who are down there probably doing
second time.
I know, sorry, probably down there doing nothing. Let's be honest.
Yeah, but certainly weren't doing slideshows.
Exactly, but I like that little shout out to Mulder's slideshow because we haven't seen a slideshow in so long, so it was just really nice.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a cute little detail actually. Like, I don't know where the screen is. It's just kind of a nice little continuity reminder about the fact that they're still relatively new back in the X-Files.
Yeah. I mean, it's been like maybe like 6 or 7 episodes, so it's been but I think this scene, and by the way, they both look fabulous in this episode, and this scene in particular.
Yeah.
Whoever did Scully's makeup on this day, bravo, props to you.
She looks fabulous.
Yeah, her hair looks nice and her makeup very, very nice. But
even when she's coming out of the ground, she looks amazing, quite frankly.
It's true. It's hard for her not to, but you know, just wanted to get a little shout out. Just every once in a while I'll notice that she's looking particularly on fleek. Is that what the kids say?
I think so.
So they have this great exchange where, you know, it's typical basement conversation of him. Yeah. He's telling her about the case and she's going, oh, Mulder, UFOs again. And he finally calls her on it. And we're almost 7 years into this show. And he finally says, look, Scully, I am usually the one who's right. And it's time that you acknowledge that. And to her credit, she doesn't give him guff about it. You know, she kind of like, she kind of does like a, yeah, I never really took a tally, but yeah, I guess he's right. And
there's nothing I can say to that.
Yeah, I mean, and we got a similar sort of conversation earlier in How the Ghost Stole Christmas, which is funny because we were just talking about that up on this very podcast several weeks ago, but where she kind of has a moment where she's just like, yeah, I'm always trying to prove you wrong. And he does say, when have you ever proved me wrong? You know, and
so yeah, it definitely has that connection.
But there was a little bit of tension here. I felt it. It wasn't like good natured in a way. I mean, it wasn't mean, but it wasn't like he's in his typical jokey way. It was him being like, look, take me seriously, which is like, it's a big sort of theme of season six, I think, over the course of the season. So, I mean, going into the biogenesis arc with the constant touchstone and all that stuff, when they finally kind of come around again, it's kind of a nice lead into that. But I just think this whole exchange is really nice, and I'm glad they put it in there somewhere.
Yeah, it is kind of a, it's not just a fun jokey kind of, because, you know, this is not an atypical kind of exchange between them, but the tone is a little bit edgy in a way, and it's kind of like, it makes me uneasy, like mom and dad are going to have a fight. Yeah. It just, it reminds me a little bit of Never Again. It's not quite as tense as that, but there's still a little bit of a vibe there that there's like, Mulder's really actually kind of pissed off here. So, you know, he's being kind of subtle about it and jokey about it. And Scully's a little bit kind of had it too, in a way. And she's just not in the mood for all that. I mean, that must happen from time to time with these two, that some days they're just not in the mood for it. And this was one of those days. And and it's an important sort of way to set out kind of the theme of the episode of, you know, about the kind of people they are and the kind of roles that they bring to the X-Files and this role of skeptic and believer. And is it as it appears? And how does it function within their role as work partners and romantic partners potentially?
You know, I also think it's really important, like, in the context of this very episode, because obviously this conversation is on her mind as she goes through these hallucinations and as she's trying to figure it out, and as she's just like what the fuck is everybody talking about, like, this is not right, like I know it's crazy, but like Mulder's right, like come on, like, and she's kind of being the Mulder, no one's listening to her, and it's just, it's really nice to see her in that role. I mean, we don't get to see that. We don't really get to see that very often, and until I would say maybe like season eight, we get to see a little bit of that. But it's just, it's really nice to see that sort of, you know, even in a hallucination, that kind of role reversal, because it's like they are coming at each, like they're coming to a new understanding of each other, I think, in this episode, and like realize that, you know, maybe they know each other really well, obviously, because like literally them knowing each other well is what breaks them out of this hallucination, which I think is probably the most chippy thing ever.
Kind of is.
Yeah. But I do think that that's interesting, because this is a good episode to have that conversation in. I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's a good way that it's so well written and well acted in terms of, you know, it is kind of jokey, but a little tense at the same time. So really interesting the way that's sort of laid out there. And yeah, it definitely informs the whole rest of the episode in terms of Scully's hallucination and in terms of Mulder's hallucination too. He's obviously thinking about, you know, what kind of, you know, the idea of Scully having these sort of rational explanations and, oh, hey, maybe these are actually quite useful explanations sometimes. So
yeah,
they're both, it's sort of, they're starting off the episode in their usual positions of, you know, taking the usual approach that they both take. But then in the course of the episode with through their hallucinations, they're starting to see the other's point of view. And that's what kind of breaks the spell.
Yeah, or, you know, like, I could just be rehashing what you just said, but yeah, sharing both of their beliefs, like, utilizing both, which is like what Mulder says, you know, when he's, you make me a whole person, like, you can't do it with just me, it needs to be both of our points of view to sort of break ourselves out of this, so it's a nice, it's like almost just like a visual episodic demonstration of that dynamic, which is,
it really is,
and that is an X-File,
Exactly. And the dynamics, maybe not as simple as it appears on the surface. It's not just, you know, Scully's always the skeptic and Mulder's always the believer and they're always at loggerheads. It's not quite that simple. It's a lot more complex, especially at this point in the relationship. So, yeah, I really like the way they explored that through the hallucinations.
Yeah, and also another thing I noticed is, like I said, like the tension is kind of until the very, very end. There's a little bit of tension between them starting right off the beginning that even continues on into the autopsy bay or whatever you call it.
Yeah,
where he's like, I'm gonna go check us out, and she's like, you go ahead, and she's not even looking at him. She's just kind of like looking over, and I'm not saying like she's mad or anything, but it's one of those moments. It's like she's looking at this autopsy, she's busy, or she's looking at the body, mm-hmm. whatever, and he's leaving, she's like, go ahead, whatever, and that is going to in essence be the last time she ever sees him. And certainly, even though it's in her hallucination, certainly she's thinking about that later, like, oh my god, like I didn't even the last thing we were doing was fighting, you know what I mean?
It
kind of makes me think of what we were talking about just the other week when we were talking about Little Green Men, how Mulder yells at Samantha, get out of my life, like, and then she gets abducted. And I mean, it's just another one of those horrifying, like, terrible things, like, oh really?
Yeah, it's like, oh, was that our last conversation? I could do a lot better than that. It is. Yeah, clearly there's not, it's not like they're not like in a super happy flirty mood at that stage, for sure.
No, it's definitely, yeah, it's very work partnerly, we're doing our thing, and I'm not,
yeah, whatever, I'm kind of done with you today, actually. Yeah, I've just had it with you today, I'm not interested, you know. They're still being very professional, but that's all they're being.
Everybody has those days.
Oh my yes.
Yeah. Oh my yes. So Mulder, let's talk about Mulder's like hallucination, which I think is really cool because I really think it plays into like, it kind of goes to the heart of his, all of his sort of issues. I mean, talking about Samantha, like his hallucination is is right away abductions. I'm right about this abductions. Like she's still, Angela's there, or Angie, whatever her name is. She's still there, and she's talking about how she was, or first, what's his name?
First it's Wallace.
And he's talking about how she's still out there. She's still out there. She's being experimented on. And that could be Mulder projecting on Samantha. It could also be Mulder projecting on Scully and like what happened. What happened to her.
I was tending to kind of always see that as, I always thought it could be both, but I tended to see it more as being a boat Scully just because of the urgency and the intensity that Wallace expresses himself. Like, what do I do? And it just seems to me so reminiscent of how Mulder felt during the abduction arc, that he's just so frustrated, like, what do I do? That felt very reminiscent of that. And then, of course, when Angie is allegedly returned, she turns out to have the scar on the back of her neck. So there's more sort of comparisons with Scully there. But yeah, definitely there can be a Samantha element too. But, you know, whenever there's abductions involved and Mulder's concerned about people, it can always be, it always comes back to Samantha at the end of the day. And then Scully later on too. But, you know, having that element of his hallucination about this abduction and the Scully sort of connection, kind of, it gives Mulder that sort of like emotional investment in their story. And so it would make sense, like his hallucination would be about trying to save people that have experienced things that he hasn't always been able to save people from before. And so that makes kind of sense that that would be alluring to him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I agree with everything that you just said.
Boom.
And I like the idea too, that it's all this sort of standard fare. All this abduction, like I would say abduction lore, like the, you know, everything he's experienced, like the chip on the back of the neck and the white room and all the things that he already knows. And so it's kind of sort of the self-fulfilling prophecy of the hallucination sort of, you know, reinforcing that and feeding it back into him. And then he's like, well, of course I'm right. Of course I'm right. So I just think that's all really interesting. And I love how they do that. And I think that these scenes are really well acted by because like I said, like every time I watch it, I don't want to say every time I watch it, but the first few times I watched it, I'm like, OK, wait. So wait, are these people actually really here? Like, were they decoys? Yeah. Like, what's actually really happening? And then
what's going on here?
Yeah. No, they did. They did.
They are actually dead.
They are dead. They're dead, dead, dead. But like the entire time I'm thinking, oh, these poor people, like hopefully they're able to be, you know. They're gonna get out of this cave.
They're gonna be okay
because they seem like really nice people. But no, they're not.
They do, and like I noticed that they have that little moment in the morgue or wherever they are, where they're looking at the files, and there's just a second where we see, I think, Mulder and Scully, maybe just Mulder, I can't remember, looking at the photos in the files of Wallace and Angie, which is why he can picture them in his hallucination.
Exactly.
Because there's photos of them in the files, and he gets to actually, we see him looking at them. So that explains how he knows exactly what they look like.
And wearing those same clothes, which surely they weren't wearing in that scene. I mean, I don't even remember. Right. I don't remember what they were wearing when they came back into the motel and they were like taking off their shoes and stuff. I don't remember what they were wearing, but that could have even just been, that was their hallucination or her hallucination.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's right.
It really doesn't even matter.
Doesn't really matter. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a really good point. And I didn't pick up on that. That, yeah, he's imagining them in those same exact clothes because he saw those photos and that's what he had in his mind. That's a really, really good point. Well done, Jen. Yeah. I like it.
Thank you.
Everybody listening probably already picked up on that, but I did not. So that's awesome.
No, well, it was a first for me actually this week. It's funny. I was, usually when I'm watching Field Trip, I'm just enjoying it. I'm not trying to analyze it that carefully, but I noticed a lot of things this time around that I don't normally notice because I was trying extra hard.
Yeah, trying to really kind of parse it out. It's definitely one of those that, like you said, it benefits from multiple rewatches.
It really does.
What I think was a couple cool effects, I just wanted to point out because I was like, hey, I don't know if this was a Kim Manners thing or if this was, I don't know who decided this, but I love the idea that like the lights are coming in and it's all crazy and it's like alien abductions. And then you see that it's like Scully, like pointing her little flashlight in. And it's not like that's really happening. But again, I love the idea that they're totally playing with reality because it makes you think, oh, that's happening. Like she's shining the light in and he's thinking it's aliens.
Yeah.
But in reality, she's not even there probably. So it's like, it's all unreliable narrator, all of this stuff. Which that's a really cool thing. And then I liked the like effect of the lights when Mulder's like, no, heck no, I'm going to go see what's in those lights. And he's walking right to them. Hey, a year from now, he's going to do the exact same thing.
That's
so,
exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. And wearing fleece both times, I will point out.
That's a really
good point. He should stop wearing fleece because it seems to make him want to just walk towards aliens and wind up getting abducted. No, don't do it, Mulder.
This is going to be an ad campaign for North Face. North Face, wear our stuff, get abducted. Oh, geez.
But it is about Mulder and fleece, but that's what happens.
You're totally right. And he definitely walks towards it, which is a really nice, honestly, a probably completely unintentional, but a really sort of nice foreshadowing moment that, hey, you know what? When given the choice, Mulder's going to walk towards that ship. So,
it's very similar.
Yeah, it was. And it was interesting. But I liked the effect of when he walks and then the light kind of like shrinks and it flips around and then it turns into the 42 on his door.
Yeah, really cool sort of transition there.
Yeah, and totally unnecessary, which made me like it even more because, I mean, it was so unique to the flavor of this show and the language of this show that you know you're watching something different. Like, and so in a way, it kind of clues you into the fact that you're watching something that's not real.
That's true. Yeah, because usually things are pretty straightforward on the X-Files visually, and this was a little too fancy.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a little bit of a hint that, hey, something up here. Something is
weird. And I mean, the way that they're behaving and stuff, like, and I always, I think it's messing with me a little bit too whenever I watch this, because we start out that scene with Scully walking down the hallway and knocking on the door, which in my mind, like in movie language or television language, means, okay, we're kind of in Scully's POV or we're in her vision. But that's not how it turns out, because he answers the door. She comes in. By the way, adorable how she just kind of goes under his arm. I love that.
And oh, yeah. Cute.
It's such a tiny little detail that I would just really like to know whose idea that was and why they did it, because it's precious.
They do that sometimes. I'm going to have to, like, someone needs to do a whole montage of all the times that Scully ducks under Mulder's arm at a door or something like that, because it does happen and it's adorable every time.
Does it happen? Okay, because you're going to need...
It happens like a few times.
We're going to need to have people point out the times that's happened.
I cannot find them. I just know they're
okay. Okay, because I don't know if they...
There's at least a couple.
I'm going to sit here and say I don't think there are. So
okay, we'll see. Please, listeners, you got to help me because I'm never going to be able to find it.
We'll see who's right. But I don't know. I just feel like I feel like this moment is very special because I don't think it's happened before.
It is unusual, definitely. Yeah. And it's adorable the other times it happens. We'll see if I can remember any.
All right, we'll figure it out. But I love the idea, too, that like she's like, Mulder, why did you leave North Carolina and not tell me? And I'm like, of course he ditched her in his dream. Like, what else would he do?
And of course she's kind of annoyed about that in his dream.
Yeah. I mean, and this whole scene, I have to say, even though it's a dream, and it kind of sucks that it's a dream, because this whole scene is one of my favorite scenes, I think, in the entire series. I think it really is. It's definitely my favorite scene in this episode. is the scene when she comes in and he's telling her about everything, because the way he's talking to her is so, it's not smug. It's not right. Like, I was right. It's nothing about that. It's just complete, like, wonder, like, amazement. Yep. Like I really want to show this to you. I have waited my entire life to show this to you. Like, and I really, really get that feeling from this scene. And knowing that it's kind of in his head makes me like it even more, because, like, that's at the end of the day, I think what Mulder started out wanting and what he ended up wanting are obviously different things. And I think he really just wants her to see it. And he's so excited and he's so happy that he knows for sure she's finally going to see it. There's nothing. Yeah. There's no getting around this. She's going to see this. Yeah. There's nothing she can do about it. And he's just so thrilled. He's just so tickled by it. Yeah.
He just wants to share it with her. He doesn't want to, like, rub it in her face or even convince her necessarily. He's just like, this is amazing, and I want to show my girlfriend.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think he's expecting all of the typical Scully retorts. Like, you know, that's just a child in a suit. It's not a real alien. It's not. It's something. It's a Muppet. Mulder, there's a million explanations, but no, we don't get any of those things. None of those things from Scully. She's just right off the gate. She's like, oh my God, I'm even talking to it.
Yeah.
It's talking to me. Wow. You were right. You were right about everything. And it just starts, like, coming out like word vomit. Like, you were right about this. You were right about that. And
everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that scene, by the way, when he's just very quietly showing her the alien in his bedroom. How intimate and suggestive and symbolic is that? Like, honestly, like, that scene where he's like, that alien did not have to be in the bedroom, right? It could have been in the kitchen.
It could have been anywhere.
It could have been anywhere. It could have been in the office. Like, it could have been anywhere. Yeah. But no, this alien is in his bedroom. He's going to take her into his bedroom, his dark bedroom.
And he's going
to be like, hey, Scully, check this out. Yeah. I love it.
It's all very sort of touchy-touchy as well.
Yeah, and it's such a sweet scene. It really is. I mean, I'm laying on the innuendo really thick, but it is very, very sweet
scene.
It's
there. Yeah, it is a sweet scene and a very, obviously, a very unusual scene on The X-Files to get to see an alien and to see, you know, Mulder and Scully looking at an alien together. Of course, you know, that's not what happens on The X-Files. So it's kind of fun that we get to see it once.
Well, and you know what's funny? And it's funny that you bring that up, because I love the idea that we actually got introduced to this Gray previously in The Unnatural, which was right before this, or a couple episodes before this. I think that was a really good call in terms of airing order, because that was sort of a silly moment, and it was supposed to be silly in The Unnatural, where we're seeing him in the baseball being like, hey, this is the alien. Even though that was a really sort of serious story, they're showing it to us in kind of an unserious circumstance, so we can see it. We can process, oh, we just saw that alien. So that when we do see it now in Field Trip in a serious scenario, we're prepared for it, and we're not going to laugh that off like it's supposed to be funny, because it's supposed to be in this scene very, very serious.
Yeah, and it is quite serious. Like, it's quite creepy the way, like, his hand kind of appears first, and it's pretty scary, actually.
I wanted to know, like, who is responsible for, like, the alien puppet. It actually is a Muppet. It is a Muppet, Scully. She's right in the end, but you know what I mean? Like, I really think that, like, that it they did a good job with this alien. This whole scene's great. And then to top it off, what caps this scene off in my mind is the whole thing is great. But when he's telling her and she's just buying it, and then the way that David delivers that line about, I can't believe you're buying this. Like, and it's like he is talking himself out of what is happening, because that's not Scully. It doesn't matter if it's staring her right in the face. She is going to have something
she's
to say.
Question it.
Yeah.
It's like there's so many different ways he could have delivered that line. Like, it could have been like, "I can't believe you're buying this," but it's really like he literally, "I can't believe you're buying this." It's like, and you know, he's not, and you know, he throws a little laugh in there, which is not an obvious way to deliver that line, but it works really well. It's kind of like, this is too good to be true, and I know it is right now. There's something wrong here, and I'm kind of like, I'm laughing, but this isn't funny. It's just kind of like, I'm kind of losing it right now.
Yeah.
And it's really well done, and that's because that's the moment when he starts to, he starts to see the truth.
And it's like, I think when he starts to figure out something's wrong, because he's grabbing his head too, and I remember that Angela yes. Schiff was doing the same. When he starts to figure out something's wrong is when he starts seeing all the goop, you know?
Yeah. Those goop scenes are always really creepy and really cool too throughout the episode.
Really, really well done. I think, though, I just wanted to, as always, every time there's a moment like that that I think is particularly shout-out worthy, I need to shout out to David for that, even that little bit of acting there. It's just, yeah. I think it's just a really good example of how he's so subtle, I think, with his acting that yeah. it can really come across as just such a really, really nice, realistic moment. And yeah. that was just a really great example of it. So well done, David. Great yeah, scene.
Really, and very striking.
Yeah. One of my favorite
scenes. It's a key moment in the whole episode. That's mm-hmm. the first real clear indication we have that, wait a second, something's up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be very easy to oversell that and to make a big deal about it. But he does it subtly, but in a way that you pay attention. And
yeah.
So, yeah, really well done as always on David's part.
And like we were talking about earlier, he even starts throwing back like the Scully retorts, like, no, what about the skeletons? Well, what about the bog sludge?
Yeah.
Like, and he's now taking on her role, like saying, no, I need to ask these things. I need to keep myself honest the way.
Yeah, like someone
you
needs
would.
To ask this because Scully's not asking it. Yeah. Someone's got to bloody do it. So I guess it's going to be me. And that to me is the first time when you know for sure this is not reality, because Scully says, yeah, that goop just turned out to be bog sludge.
Yeah.
But we already know as viewers that that's not true, that she was talking to the coroner and it did turn out to be something other than bog sludge. So that's when we know for sure,
yeah.
wait a second, that's not real Scully. That's the only time we really start to know for sure that something's up.
Exactly.
So, so that's a very sort of key moment when everything starts to turn.
Yeah, and so that's when also, and not luckily, it doesn't give it too much away, because very shortly after that, we realize that Mulder is, in fact, being held down below by the giant mushroom. I don't know. I always just refer to it as the giant mushroom.
That's kind of what it is.
Yeah. So
giant magic mushroom.
How does this mushroom actually work? I mean, like physically work. It is. It makes me think of, like, are you a Star Wars fan?
Yes, I am.
OK. It makes me think of the Sarlacc pit. Like,
yeah.
You're going to fall down yeah. and you're going to fall down and it's going to slowly digest you for 1,000 years. Like,
yeah.
And that's
yeah.
kind of what it feels like. And I, not to throw another sci-fi reference into the mix, but it also makes me think of The Matrix, which is like
yeah.
how they're keeping them alive. Like, why don't they just, like, you know, everyone always asks, why do they bother building The Matrix? Why do they have to give
right.
them this huge, you know, hallucination? It's like, no, it keeps them alive. It keeps their brain pumping. It keeps the mm-hmm. nutrients flowing, I suppose. And so
yeah.
it makes their meal fresher, right?
Yeah. Fresh and delicious.
Exactly.
And in this particular giant mushroom, there's an indication that it has a sort of soporific effect on the victims that I think that the term that Scully uses
soporific?
Later on is that soporific. You know, it makes you sleepy.
Oh, soporific.
I think that's what soporific means. I could have just said makes you sleepy.
I learned a new word.
Soporific. Lots of things make me sleepy, so that's why I know that word. I think Scully uses the term complacent. It makes its victims complacent. So that they don't struggle and they just kind of give in. And if I can make another, just quickly insert another sci-fi reference, there's an episode of Doctor Who that's very similar to this called Last Christmas. And it also involves hallucinations and the creature who's creating the hallucination doing so that you just kind of relax and let yourself be digested. So
yeah.
that's what's going on here. And so the question, of course, that we'll discuss, I'm sure, is why these particular hallucinations? Like, what exactly is the creature trying to achieve? Is it trying to make you happy? Or is he trying to make you calm? Is he trying to make you give up the fight? Which of those things is accurate? Because, of course, I've heard the criticism about this episode that, well, obviously, the giant mushroom, the purpose of that hallucination is to make you sort of relaxed and contented while you're being digested. And, oh, it turns out that Mulder's fondest wish is that his theories turn out to be true, and that Scully's fondest wish is that Mulder is dead. Well, of course, no.
That's
not it, people.
Well, I don't necessarily think that's a failing. I feel like maybe it's not necessarily about not a fear, but just kind of like exacerbating whatever your thoughts are at the moment, like, or whatever. It doesn't necessarily be happy or sad or whatever. It's just human. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so it could be explained that way.
I think it could be. And I think it does sort of serve a purpose in terms of making the victim a bit more complacent in terms of, for one thing, for making it seem like it's real life, for one thing.
Yeah.
And also to kind of, like make them complacent, make them not fight, make them a little bit more sort of just giving up. And so to me, it's an interesting question of what sort of hallucination makes Mulder give up, which is, you know, he gets everything he wants. He finds all the truths. And what is it that makes Scully give up? It's losing Mulder.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting sort of insight into their characters to me.
That is interesting. And I also don't look at it as the hallucinations are in any way controlled by the organism. Like, they're coming from themselves. So it's
it definitely comes from them. But I think that, we could, I guess, argue that, evolution has created the kind of hallucinogenic drug that makes people want to chill out.
To do
and
X,
so
Y,
it
Z.
It happens to be a hallucination that kind of tends to make you chill for whatever reason. And I think it's more along the lines of not chilling because you're happy, but chilling because you're just giving up because there's no reason to go on, kind of thing.
Yeah. Totally.
That's the way I interpreted that with my little psychoanalysis going on.
No, I like it. I really do. I think that there's probably a bunch of ways to interpret it. And I would like to hear what everybody thinks if you guys have different ideas. But
there is that. And that's one of the things I love about this episode is that there is so much you can bring to it in terms of how you interpret the hallucinations and what it says about Mulder and Scully individually and what it says about their relationship. And there's a lot going on here because the writing is really great. And so, I'd love to hear other people's take on that, too.
I have a question, Jen.
All right, good. I love answering questions when I can.
I know that this is just Scully's hallucination, but who the hell are all these people in Mulder's apartment?
I know, right? Every time I watch it, I'm always like, is there a meaning? Are we going to recognize a few of these people? But I mean, I guess we're meant to maybe sort of infer that they're FBI colleagues, I suppose, because they all look like they all kind of look like FBI agents. They're all kind of dressed that way, didn't
we? And they all kind of look at Scully kind of sympathetically, like
they know her.
They know, like, oh, that's Mulder's, you know, that's his chickadee. I'm not going to say chickadee.
I'm going to say chickadee.
Yeah, that's
someone needs to be Mulder's chickadee.
That's
and
his
it's
gal.
Not who you think it is
exactly. But it's interesting that, even in Scully's worst nightmare, that we have to bring her up again, that Diana's not in that room. I love it because she would be, but, you know, not in Scully's hallucination, not even in her worst fungal nightmare will Diana Fowley be present at Mulder's funeral. I love it.
If they wanted to, they could have stuck her in the episode. It wouldn't have been that hard. She was going to show up in the next one anyway.
Right.
But thank God. I could never have loved Field Trip if she was in it for even a moment. So thank God. They're all just very generic people, aren't they? I guess it's just to Scully, it doesn't matter. But except the only people recognizable people are Skinner and, of course, the lone gunman. And it's when, of course, when she's talking to them and they're buying the party line that she's got to take on the Mulder role and say, she's the one who suddenly looks like the crazy one in the room and saying, why is everyone just accepting this? This is crazy. You know, why don't you see this? Where is he? She sounds crazy, just like Mulder usually does. And I love the way that when both of them start to realize the truth of their hallucinations, both Mulder and Scully, it's when they start to see it from the other person's point of view and to take on their perspective. And I mean, to go back to my original argument that the purpose of the hallucinogen is to kind of make you just kind of like chill. In a sense, on the surface, Mulder and Scully maybe consciously, you could argue, more psychoanalysis from Jen, consciously sort of want these things. Mulder wants to be right. Scully wants to be right and to be validated for her theories and for her wonderfully written report. But in reality, subconsciously, they don't really want that, because when those things actually happen in their hallucination, when they kind of get what you think you would think they would want, that's the moment when they say, no, this is wrong. Like, maybe Mulder always wanted to be proven right about aliens, but that's when he knows he's wrong, when Scully doesn't call him on it and he knows this can't be right. And Scully always wants to be, you know, to be the rational, reasonable one for people to finally just drop the bullshit and see things in a scientific way. And when everyone does that, she doesn't like it either. So what they sort of consciously want and what they subconsciously want, perhaps two different things.
Yeah, and each other.
Yeah. Of course, mm-hmm. because that's when they start having their joint hallucination and they need each other to figure it out. Now, I kind of started to notice this a little bit more this week as well, how there's two parts, of course, to their joint hallucination. The first part is in Mulder's apartment when Scully's very much leading the conversation. She's got it all figured out.
She's figuring it out. Yep.
And Mulder's just sitting there, and it seems like probably in reality, he's still very much under the hallucination and still being digested very powerfully. And he seems really like the way David acts that, he seems really quite sort of perhaps soporific. He seems really dopey.
Yeah.
As though like he's still, you know, drugged up. Mm-hmm. But Scully's kind of cutting through
it. And he's further along than she is, too.
Yeah, that's right, because he's in there first.
Yeah.
So we have that scene, of course, and then we have the scene in Skinner's office, but it's flipped in that one.
Yeah.
And that's when Mulder is the one who's figured it out, and Scully's a bit more passive. So I find it, are we to think that both of those scenes, because I see both of those scenes as being sort of joint hallucinations, but that perhaps each one, they are kind of... each is convincing the other essentially at different times. Like Scully is convincing Mulder in the first one because we see the sort of the goopy dissolve of Scully happens at the end of that scene. And then Mulder is convincing Scully in the second scene because we see the goopy dissolve of Mulder after he shoots Skinner. And so while I think that each character who's the more passive in each of those scenes, I think those scenes is from the passive character's point of view, because they see the other character kind of dissolve. And in their imagination, in their hallucination, the other is convincing them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. No, that does, because you're right. Every time one of them seems to start to be figuring it out is when the gooping occurs. Yeah. So it's like you're seeing, it's like you can't do anything about it, but you can sort of see what's happening. Like you can sort of figure it out in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like they're not being active at that point, but they're hearing the voice of their partner explaining to them what's going on.
Right.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I wanted to bring up too about that scene in their apartment still when they're talking and Scott, like you said, Mulder's super doped out and he's kind of like, "Well, how do you explain it? I'm here."
Yeah.
And like
I'm here.
He's just very like, I love it. He's just super chill. But like Scully's the one who's trying to figure it out. In the end, it's like we all kind of tend to forget that Scully is the one that ended up being right this time in this one.
She did, like
100%. It was not aliens. And it's funny because in this case, like Mulder's still kind of trying to push the alien scenario. He's like, "Well, no." Like she's talking about the mushroom and he's kind of like rolling his eyes at her like she's the crazy one. And it's just really funny because it does sound silly. There's a giant mushroom that's eating us.
Yeah, do you think I'm crazy with the UFO lady? I mean, you're on about this giant mushroom. Come on, who's the crazy one now?
Exactly, but I love that, though, because it's coming from Scully, and it's the more scientific explanation, but it's also the more crazy one. And
it's crazy, but scientific.
And yeah, and I think that, I do think that gets overlooked, because I do want to eventually keep tally. I should ask, I know our good friend Kathy loves her spreadsheets. We should ask her if she's kept track of when Scully is right and when Mulder is right. But I wanted to say, this is probably one of those moments where technically, even though Mulder gets to be right at the end, when Scully had already figured it out. So she technically is the one who gets to be right in this
Scully's
episode.
The one who certainly explains it all. And then Mulder just sort of adds that explanation on one more time at the end, basically.
Right. Like Mulder, he knows something is up. He knows that this is a fantasy, but he doesn't quite know what's going on. And she's the one who's able to say, "Look, this is exactly what's happening and why." And then once he's got that information in his head, he is then able to break free. So
I think so.
It's like it's just this really nice meeting of the minds. They're using each other's strengths.
Exactly.
The
fact that there are like two different scenes where they both, where each of them kind of like figures it out, it means that it's very equal that way. Like there isn't one of them that breaks the other out. They essentially each breaks the other out in two different scenes.
Yes.
And I do love that. I just have to give a little shout out to that moment in that scene in the apartment when they're trying to figure it out. And Scully says to Mulder something like, you don't remember how you got here. And then there's that moment where she says, neither do I, or something like that. And that, just the way that Jillian delivers that line, it's kind of like, oh shit. Yeah. Like, oh my God. Like, she's so freaked out right now. And shit just got real. And it always really gets me, that line, the way she does it. So I love that moment. It's just so like, oh, it's just chilling.
Totally.
And like, it's all like, what is happening right now? That's the whole episode, is what is happening right now. And I love that. I love that about it.
I mean, before we talk about this final scene and them breaking free of the hallucination, I wanted to add one more thing about Scully in the apartment at Mulder's wake, and how no one's believing her, and she's getting frustrated. And it really just made me think about like just the eternal struggle of being the victim of an X-Files case. Because it's everyone is just saying, well, it was XYZ and we're done. We're washing our hands of this, and no one's ever going to investigate. No one's ever going to look further. When Scully is the one, and they're saying, there are unanswered questions here, and am I the only one who's asking them? And that's like their mantra of Mulder and Scully down in the basement looking for justice for these people, looking for answers for what happened and how it happened and why it happened. And I just think that this is a really nice sort of demonstration of that perspective, and coming from Scully, I think makes it all the more meaningful.
Great point. That it's just that, imagine that frustration of being so sure in your own mind about something, and the more certain you are, the crazier you sound to everybody else. And that's another great scene that Julian does an awesome job with, that where, you know, she's whispering with the lone gunman at first, and she's getting more and more frustrated, and very sort of subtly, it's slowly but surely, her whispering turns into yelling. But it just, you can just see the frustration and just the anxiety about the situation just kind of like seeping out of her as she goes on. And it's very, really, really cool scene. And really great point about the frustration of people who are victims of these X-Files and how hard that is.
Yeah, I mean, and she's not even saying like, oh, something else is going on here, there's more explanation. Like, she is saying that, but at the end of the scene when she's gotten really riled up, she's just now saying, where's Mulder? Like, what? I no longer believe he's actually even dead. Somebody tell me where he is. Like, and I like the idea that like it's kind of ramped up into that over the course of this scene. You know what I mean? Like,
she
straight up doesn't believe it anymore. It's not even just like, oh, I'm questioning my own theories, like ritualistic murder. I don't know. Maybe is a no. He is not dead. Like, and it's a really nice sort of progression, and you get it with her whispering into her yelling, and
she's just like all out by the end of that, and she sounds super crazy, because that's just what you would expect like the widow to say at a funeral if they had completely lost their shit.
Yeah,
where is he? I know he's not dead. It's like, oh, poor thing. Yeah. She just can't cope with his death.
Yeah.
And she sounds really crazy, but it makes perfect sense that that's exactly what she would want to know, because she knows at that point. She believes he's alive, and it's Scully, and all she wants to do is know where Mulder is and get to him and save him.
And weirdly enough, it makes me think of later when she finds him actually dead, and she's just saying, this is not happening. And that's all she can say, because it's like, even though he's actually dead, she can't believe it.
That's a really good point. And, you know, I was thinking of those parallels actually when I was watching this, like when she finds Mulder's body in this, when she finds his skeleton, it is it's very sort of reminiscent of what we wind up seeing in This Is Not Happening. You know, I think he's found sort of outside somewhere, and she's got that same sort of look of devastation. And that's a really good point. I mean, I kind of like the headcanon now that in This Is Not Happening, she's thinking back to field trip maybe and thinking, you know, someone please tell me this is another hallucination. This is not happening.
That's
and so I think that's, I like that idea.
Yeah. No, that's totally interesting. I really like that a lot.
Yeah. I'm just going to go with that.
Yeah. Other than that, I would like to hear, I mean, we could talk about the Skinner scene, but I want to hear your theories on the ending, because apparently you have some sort of crazy theory. First of all, I just wanted to say, Mulder is awfully sure that they're an hallucination, and he's going to stand up and Skinner like point blank. I mean, I almost don't like this scene for that reason, but I think it borders like the line of like too much, like comical almost, like
yeah,
a little over, little melodramatic,
a little too much.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, we get it. Like, we know Mulder, sure. But, like, does he really need to be that sure?
Yeah.
Like, you know?
I mean, is there no other way you could have proven it?
Yeah.
Like, just to make another reference to the Doctor Who episode that I mentioned, the way that they prove they're in a dream is they take the same book, give it to several people. Everyone's supposed to read from one page. And, of course, in a dream, not everyone can remember what's on that page. Whereas in reality, everyone would be able to read from it. And I'm like, okay, could you not just, like, grab a couple of manuals and just compare the pages to see if they seem like they're the same? But no, I'm going to stand up and shoot Skinner. Poor Skinner.
I know.
Like, it seems like I'm gonna shoot.
It just seems like the most dramatic way to do this. And it
really is.
It comes across that way in the episode. I mean, it's a cool effect and it's nice and it definitely shows his dedication, but at the same time, it shows it shows a little too much ego. Like a little too much.
And I am that sure that I'm right. But is it also possible that I might argue that at that moment is being seen from Scully's perspective, because it's Mulder who dissolves at the end of that scene, seen through Scully's eyes, I think. And so it's possible she's imagining that Mulder would be that sure of himself that he would shoot Skinner. So it's not necessarily Mulder being that sure, but Scully imagining that he'd be that sure.
You are absolutely right. And you know what? You just made me walk that back, because I think that actually works when I think about it that way. It's just it's a really sort of black and white way to show it, that she's aware how sure he is. Within this hallucination. So all right. I can buy that, and I like that a lot. Well
done. And I guess she probably kind of imagined. Thank you. And I guess Scully tends to readily imagine Mulder as doing sort of reckless and dangerous things to prove his theories. So that's not too far off the pack. So we don't necessarily as an audience have to see it as, wow, the writers were kind of reaching with this. We can kind of see it as, well, it's Scully imagining it. And so everything's on the table at that point. So it doesn't have to necessarily be rational or reasonable. It's just what Scully would kind of imagine would happen in that scenario.
And this is sort of the reason why I always refer to Field Trip as sort of like the serious bad blood. Because
absolutely.
Because it does, at the end of the day, it's all about how they see each other. It's just this one doesn't have all the humor. Like,
that's
right. And it's so, in a weird way, I feel like it's kind of a nice follow-up, not a follow-up, but like another type of episode like Bad Blood. Mm-hmm. But hey, we're going to do the same idea, but we're going to take it seriously this time.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And I have totally different feelings about those two episodes.
Right.
And I think it's largely because in Bad Blood, I don't feel like we learn anything about the characters. But I feel like in Field Trip, we really do. And so I like that aspect of Field Trip a lot. But that's a good point.
I can't believe you're still saying that after our
conversation. I don't know how I'm bringing up Bad Blood twice. I'm just asking for trouble. Why did I even do that?
But no, I just like, I remember when we talked about it and we were discussing how it's not how we see them, but it's how they see each other and how we found that rather illuminating.
I mean, yeah, it is, but it is. It is.
Right.
It's just not as illuminating to me as Field Trip is.
Yeah, well, that's
fair. It's just kind of like, it's just, there's too much. It's just a little too meta in Bad Blood. You have to think too hard about, oh, okay, so this is what this means about what Scully thinks about Mulder. Like what we're talking about here in this scene in Skinner's office. I don't want to have to see the whole episode through that lens of thinking about, okay, so is this what Scully's thinking about what Mulder would do? Or is this what Mulder would think about Scully would do? I'd rather just see what they kind of imagine themselves doing and how the other person would interact with them. Okay. Not necessarily just picturing what the other person would do. This is a bit more holistic. That's my argument, I guess.
All right. Well, then that's a fair argument.
I'm going to go with that. Plus, you know, I always like the more angsty episodes anyway. It just goes without saying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, then there's nothing wrong with that. Well, let's hear, Jen. What's your theory about how this? Because we have Skinner and everyone rescue them. They have the masks on, so we know they're not being affected by the hallucination.
Yeah.
The spore juice or whatever's coming up.
Yeah,
out of them.
And that's right. They're being very, very cautious.
Yeah, Mulder and Scully get loaded up into the ambulance, and it's weird. Yeah. It was a weird moment when Scully says mushroom, and then Skinner's like, "Yeah, we know." I feel like that was a really unnecessary moment, because we know they have masks on.
They have masks on, yeah.
So I don't know.
I don't know. It's just to reinforce they know exactly what's going on. And like there's maybe it's just so that like because that's the very last scene. And I guess it's just so that viewers won't be left wondering, well, did they ever solve the mystery? Was it really the mushroom?
Right.
This just confirms it was, in fact, the mushroom.
Right.
And so we don't have to wonder about the mystery. People, I mean, apparently not everyone is just happy with a nice handhold at the end of an episode. They might want some exposition. Not me personally, but for those that do, that's just a quick little saying like, yeah, that thing that Scully said about the mushroom, that's what actually happened here.
Okay. And I can believe that. But yeah, we have this nice moment where they're loaded into the ambulance all by themselves, by the way. Like, where are the paramedics working on them? I wonder, every single time I watch this, I'm like, who is treating them? They're just going to like throw them into a van and drive them somewhere. Like, shouldn't they be like trying to save them? I don't know. I always think that's weird. I mean, they have to be in that ambulance alone for the moment to work. So I get that.
But well, it's like, I'll forgive it. But they're just being loaded in there like cargo.
Yes, it throws me every time.
That's the whole point of an ambulance is that they can start treating you right away. But no, maybe they didn't actually have an ambulance.
No,
maybe
it's like some
truck.
Military truck or something like these. Like, it's all very weird. Again, it just adds to that sort of weirdness to me, like that disturbing feeling that I have. But anyway, in the end, it's like they just reach out and grab each other's hand, and then you know in that moment that it's real, like that we're back in reality. At least we're supposed to know that. I think that's the implication. That's how they ground each other, is that they have to have this physical touch, which is so great. It's so great.
So great. They have that touch and the look as well. They have to look into each other's eyes.
Right.
You could almost say they are each other's touchstone here, because that's literally what they're doing. They're kind of like, that's grounding them, like you say, in reality, which is what a touchstone does. So it's like a perfect sort of springboard into that sort of story arc that culminates in the announcement of a touchstone.
Absolutely. Well, I want to hear what you think is really going on here.
Okay, well, I don't know if this is what I think is really going on, because I love Field Trip and I love the way it ends and I love this idea of them being each other's sort of sense of reality. But, you know, just as kind of like a shit-stirring concept, we talked about this once before, that I am not averse to the idea of Field Trip. That's not really reality at the end. And in fact, the whole rest of the X-Files series is their hallucination as they are dying, just because I think that would be an incredibly bold choice. Now, I don't for a second think that's what is intended. I don't think Chris Carter ever wanted to do that. But I find it interesting, and I just kind of noticed that this time around. First of all, we talked already about the parallels between Wallace and Angie and Mulder and Scully. Okay, well, Wallace and Angie wound up dead. That's point number one. Point number two, and I'm sure folks have noticed
this
before.
Well, we all end up dead eventually, Jen.
We do, true. thanks for that happy addition, Annie. Appreciate it. We all wind up dead at the end. Thank you. And I'm sure folks have noticed this before, but for some reason I didn't notice the degree to which there's a parallel. And that is, you know, that moment in the teaser when we dissolve to the skeletons, we have Wallace and Angie on the bed with their kind of cuddled up heads together. Where else do we see that? Mm-hmm. At the very end of The Truth? Mm-hmm. Not only is that how the position that Mulder and Scully are in at the end of The Truth, they're wearing the same clothes pretty much. Scully is wearing a white bathrobe. So is Angie. Mulder's wearing a gray t-shirt. So is Wallace.
Oh,
Wallace,
I didn't notice the clothing.
Wallace has like navy blue jammies on for his trousers, and Mulder's wearing blue jeans. So I'm just putting it out there. Isn't that interesting that they're dressed the same, as though like it's them again? It's a little hint. This is Wallace and Angie. This is them dying together in each other's arms in this hallucination. And, you know, maybe that's the ending they were really meant to have. Because, of course, that was meant to be the last scene of the series, the last, very last shot. I'm not saying I believe this. I'm just intrigued by the concept, because it's an interesting coincidence, if nothing else.
I've heard that theory for years, actually. I've heard that theory.
Yes.
So it's definitely something that I'm like, okay, sure. I don't like that at all, because I just don't like any sort of storytelling where it turns out to like the entire thing was a dream. Like, I just
all a dream. Yeah.
Yeah. It just it kind of makes me kind of want to like just close my computer and throw it out the window. Like, I don't like that at all. I don't think it has any sort of emotional impact. I don't think it has any meaning. And it actually renders every single thing that comes after it utterly meaningless. So I don't like that at all. But I really do appreciate the parallels. And I wonder if it was intentional in a way to just kind of make you think. Because I can see Chris Carter doing something like that, thinking, well, this isn't really what's going on, but it's a cool little visual parallel that might make people think, hey, are they really still
wouldn't
underneath?
Wouldn't it be cool if you could screw around with people a little bit? Or, you know, I can see Frank Spotnitz even thinking of that, because Frank is always thinking. And who knows, maybe because he was one of the writers on this episode, maybe it popped into his head. I don't know.
That's my
only... And Kim Manners directed both episodes as well.
If the series had really ended like at season 7 or whatever, and all of season 7 was a dream, I might buy that. But three full seasons, this is actually funny. I mean, now I'm not coming around on it, but like the Wallace and Angela took 3 days to digest, right?
I believe so.
And then we took 3 seasons. To end the episode.
Thank you for adding to my crazy conspiracy theory.
And didn't speaking of 3 days, didn't it take 3 days for Jesus to resurrect?
Yeah, this is a matter of fact. I'm not quite sure how that fits in, but I'm sure it does.
Let's throw something else at the wall and see if it
sticks. Yeah, why not? Let's just keep throwing crazy theories out there and see which ones fit.
I think
it's one of those theories that I don't really believe it, because you're right. It would render everything else meaningless. And I love those other seasons. Well, I love 7 and 8. And I would not want that to be, but isn't it interesting to think about it? And I just think it would be, I would have to say bold move, X-Files. But I don't think that was the move they were making. But yeah. I do find it interesting that there is a case to be made.
There is. And here's the thing is it's not a bold move unless they come down on it. Like, there's nothing bold about it unless they say, hey, this is what we did all along.
No, exactly. It's not bold if you have to like search for the clues. That's right. Not bold at all.
I mean, in terms of doing this sort of storytelling, like, I remember there was a whole lot going around after season 11 aired that like season 11 was all a big dream and it was all still part of Scully's vision. And I was just kind of like, I mean, and I read some of the things and I listened to some of the theories and I'm like, yeah, there was a lot of interesting evidence like pointing towards that possibility that, okay, maybe. But at the end of the day, I have to look at what it all means.
Yes.
And if it means absolutely nothing, then it's worthless to me to tell that story. Like, there's no point. So, I mean, if they're going to tell us the story that they were dead the whole time, okay. Okay, great. And I mean, I have to do my obligatory bringing up of the show Lost, in which they were not dead the entire time, because people out there still seem to think that, which is not the case. It's not the case. Everyone,
I don't know Lost, so I'll take your word for it.
But I'm just saying, it when people try to do storytelling like that, or think that that is the story that they're being told, they get really mad, which is what happened with Lost. Is people thought the story they were being told, like some people thought the story they were being told, is that none of this ever happened, and people were pissed, rightly pissed. But that's not the story they were telling, and that's not what they were trying to say. And I think there was a huge misunderstanding when it came to that show. And so people's anger was sort of misplaced. In this sort of case, I feel like if we have Mulder and Scully dying at the end of season 6 for no reason at all other than they stepped into a mushroom, people would be pissed. Because are you kidding me?
Oh, they'd be really mad.
Are you kidding me?
I would have been one of them. I would have been furious.
Diana wasn't even dead yet. Like, come on.
Fair point. God, the idea that Diana lived. No.
Right? We didn't get any resolution. And so the fact that if people want to think that is where the story ended, even though this is a fantastic episode, there really is no sort of cohesive overall meaning to that.
No, there isn't.
And I mean, I guess we could say the same about the wrap up of the Samantha arc. But I think in that case, I know you don't agree with me, but I think in that case it works. Like, the mundane is appropriate and realistic. Yeah. For this, after 6 years, almost 7 years, for this to be their end, I just don't like it. So, you know what? I don't like it. at the end of the day?
No, I mean, I don't especially like it either. But it's interesting. Season 7 is not super weird, but season 6 is a weird season.
Yeah.
There's a lot of episodes about reality, unreality, dreams, things like that. If there had been more episodes like that in season 7, it would have been a much stronger evidence that they were dead and hallucinating the whole time.
Yeah.
Because that it's like, oh, because honestly, a lot of episodes in season 6 seem like they could be a dream. But with the order in which things unfolded, that wouldn't really support my theory. But if we had taken those kinds of episodes and stuck more of them into season 7, it would have actually backed up my theory quite nicely. But I can't.
Yeah. And I mean, again, if they were going to do something like that, it would have to have some kind of meaning and they would have to land on it at the end. They would have to be like, we gotcha. They were dead. And they didn't do that.
No.
So
this is like one of those just kind of like pretend theories where I don't have any actual. It's a theory that I find intriguing, but I don't necessarily espouse. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
It's way too subtle the way it was pulled off. And if you're going to do something like that, you're not going to be that subtle about it. So, but it's just kind of fun to theorize because you can do things like, hey, are they wearing the same clothes? They are wearing the same clothes. It's a fun little theory, but in terms of narrative arc, it would not have worked at all because you can't do something that big and be that subtle about it.
Yeah, kind of like making Mulder making Mulder leave in season 9 and then being really, really subtle about it, kind of like that.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Can't be that big and that subtle about it. Yeah, honestly. Jeez, guys. Learn your lesson.
You know what, though? It is interesting because I think a lot of people probably like this theory because they don't like any of the stuff that happens after this episode. So in their mind, if they can just be like, okay, well, let's just assume that they died and then I don't have to pretend.
Right.
I don't have to pretend that, that they ever had sex because that didn't happen, but I don't have to pretend that Diana lived. I don't have to pretend that Mulder got a brain disease. I don't have to pretend any of the William stuff. I don't have to pretend Mulder died and got abducted.
Right.
And all yeah. So if people yeah. want to just,
there is an appeal to people for that. Yeah, because there's I know there's a lot of people that and I certainly was one of them not that long ago that said that the X-Files ended at the end of season 7. But I am surprised to learn there are people, out there that also say, actually, I wouldn't even include season 7. The X-Files was done at the end of season 6. So maybe I'll just take it to a new level and say the X-Files finished at the end of season 5 because that's when they left Vancouver and it was never the same. Mm. But it didn't because I love season 6 through 8 way too much for that.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I just love all of it. The angst, all of that horrible stuff rolled up into one big X-Files ball. It is what it is, and I'll take it all. It's an interesting theory, and I really like those parallels.
It's just
an interesting
theory, that's all.
Yeah, and
please don't get too mad at me, to our listeners. Just think on it as like an academic exercise. That's all I'm going to say. Just, isn't this an interesting academic exercise? That's all.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that.
All right.
Do you have anything else to add about Field Trip, Jen?
I don't think so. I think that I feel really good about, we agreed largely on like the delineation of who was hallucinating what when, which was great because I wasn't sure if I had any grasp of it whatsoever. So I'm glad to hear that your grasp and mine were very similar. Makes me feel like I actually understand it, which is always good. And so I appreciated being able to really sort of pick it apart because this is one of my favorite episodes, and I think it benefits from the picking apart. Not everything benefits from that, but this episode really, really does. And because the more you pick it apart, the more interesting it gets to me. So I'm really glad we got a chance to do that.
Definitely. Also, I think this was maybe the final episode in the ones that we put out for people to vote on for us to discuss, except for, I think we had The Field Where I Died left, which is going to be on an upcoming episode. I remember we were going to watch that and talk about that one because there's a lot of stuff to talk about.
That's
on that
a
one.
Different field episode.
Yeah. We enjoy the field episodes around here. But I think we're going to put out another poll, I think, for more of our episode discussions. So if you guys want to hear us talk about a specific episode, just tweet at us and tell us, hey, discuss this, and we'll see what gets the most mentions, and then we'll, make it happen. That way we can,
that
you know.
That sounds great. And it would be great if it was something that we would not necessarily have picked ourselves, because yeah. then it just kind of expands our sort of thinking a bit, which is always great.
Right. And try not to send us mythology episodes, because obviously we are covering all of those.
We're going to do them all in the end, even if it kills me.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, send us Monster of the Weeks that you want us to do episodes on, and we will put those in the queue and vote on them and all that fun stuff. Yeah. Thanks you guys for listening, and remember to tweet at us at XFD Podcast anytime, and we will see you guys back here with another episode of X-Files Diaries.
Bye.